You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in the very beautiful, sunny Cocoa, Florida. We live in a great state, I have to say that, weather-wise, of course. So we're heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere.
That's right, on the World Wide Web, 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, there we also archive all of the shows. So you just want to look at every Monday or Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on that site, and you'll catch all of the shows by date. Then, of course, we share all of that on our social media, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and then on our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com.
Great. And for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, we have a very fun, informative, unscripted, and quite educational show today. We will be speaking with the good folks from Serene Harbor, which is a domestic violence shelter here in Brevard County, Florida. Our good friend Bev is on her way in, and we'll talk to them in a bit. And our first segment is with the people from Project Response, which, you know, Ellen, I've been trying to get this group on this show for a very, very long time. Because there's so many people in our community that are having so many issues, whether it's financial or mental or physical or emotional, spiritual, whatever it is. Somebody fits into some category at some time. And there's so many stigmas attached in our world to human beings, people hating human beings for no reason. They don't even know them, and they hate them. It's just ridiculous. So a Project Response, the president and the board of, and the what is great writing here, president and the board of Project Response, Michael Pecco is here, and he brought with him the board of directors, Project Response guy. His name is Pete Baron Greger. Greger. I'm a nurse. I should know that word. And so, you know, for our listeners who are tuning in, we try to keep our show very fair and balanced. And we try to give everyone a platform on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends to speak about topics, issues that are near and dear to their hearts. Whether you want to open a business, whether you want to write a book, whether you want to vote for someone, maybe you want to run for office, whatever it is, I think that it is our responsibility to leave the earth a better place than we found it. And we give out valuable information on our show. So if there's someone listening out there and they can take this information, put it in the back of their memory bank, and then one day if someone says, hey, can you help me? I think one of my family members may have an issue with something. And it could be that you heard something about Project Response.
That's right.
Or it could be that you needed assistance for someone in a domestic violence situation. You know, everybody's asking why this girl Cassie didn't leave this Sean Puffy Combs character. Guess what? Sometimes when you leave, it's more dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we're going to talk with Bev and them about that later. But for now, we're going to go right to Michael and ask him how he got involved with Project Response.
Thank you, Sita, for having me. Ladies, thank you for having me here today. I got involved with Project Response in 96, but I have to tell you that I've been working 34 years professionally in the HIV community. I started in 1990 at Hope and Help in Orlando, one of the leading AIDS service organizations over there, 1990. It was the executive director, the assistant director was the education, and I was the first clinical case manager for that agency. Built that up, stayed there for 6 years. Then bought a condo in Cocoa Beach and came to Brevard County.
You thought you were going to retire.
No. Well, I was too young then. I was too young to retire then. But I have retired. I'm a beach bum now. But I've been retired for a couple of years from Project Response. But now I'm on the board of directors and then got elected the president of the board. So I'm still very involved in the arena. And the arena is very close to my heart. But I came to Project Response in 96. And I end up spending 20 years of my career here in Brevard County. Project Response has been in existence for 35 years. I think it's one of the best kept secrets in Brevard County. 35 years we've been here doing HIV AIDS service organizational stuff.
Yes.
Reaching out to the community. In the early days, so the agency was basically started by a mental health counselor, Jimmy Beavis, who had a support group of gay men, of which all of them were HIV positive. And then some of the parents who had lost their sons, they got together and got assistance to form the 501c3. And that was 1990. So right. 35 years we've been in existence.
So, and I remember in the 80s, it being like, if you got diagnosed with HIV or AIDS, it was a death threat. It was an automatic, and everybody, sort of like when COVID came out, right? It was that same kind of epidemic that everyone was really scared. So over the, I hate to say it, 50 years since 1980,
sure.
and all of the things that have progressed, what are some of the things that have changed?
Well, Ellen, that's a great, great topic, because you're right. In the early 90s, particularly, so many people were just sick and being diagnosed with HIV, or actually AIDS, full-blown AIDS. AIDS is the end of HIV. HIV disease is what people get, but AIDS is the late stages of the HIV disease. So you're right. People were getting infected. People were sick. People were dying all around us. Really, our agency at that time, up until the mid-90s, was like a mass unit. All we did was really help people to, like, spend the last years of their life helping their families take care of them in the home.
Well, you had to give people hope, right? And I think back then, it was more about mental health, too.
Well, of course
people's mental health was, and emotionally, they were affected. And they needed somewhere to go for somebody to say, it's going to be okay.
Sita, you brought up a good point that there was such a stigma with HIV AIDS. We know that stigma from COVID. But I mean, HIV,
it's not the same.
HIV,
it's not the same.
HIV was the first.
The stigma from COVID is not the same as AIDS at all.
Those of us who are veterans, we call those years the plague years.
Mm-hmm.
Very different from HIV presently, but it's still an issue, believe me. So, but very much a stigma attached to being HIV, almost like a leper. I mean, we had people that would come to the agency. We were in a little storefront on Apollo Boulevard, and they wouldn't even come in the front door.
Well, they were like outcasts.
We would have to meet them in the back to come in to get their food and get their meetings with their case management. So the agency has evolved over 35 years and tried to meet the needs. As a matter of fact, at one point, in 98, we went to the Treasure Coast. We were in Fort Pierce. We did all the Treasure Coast case management. The agency down there lost their funding, and then the state asked us to step in. So we were in Treasure Coast as well as Brevard County.
So how is Project Response funded? And now's a good time to find out, because we're all watching the cuts in education and healthcare, and some of those does affect us here in Brevard County, Florida as well.
The biggest funding source historically was the Ryan White funding, which is the federal funding that was allocated to help people living with HIV AIDS in all components of their life. In saying that, the Ryan White funding paid for case management. And that's sort of what I did most of my career, was be a case manager. I had caseload myself, but then I also supervised other case managers. And what a case manager would do, and this is part of the guidelines for Ryan White funding to help direct the funding to wherever it needs to go in the most. And basically what we would do as case managers, accept or assess where the client would be in their disease process. In the early days, people were in stage. They were like sick with one or more opportunistic infections, dying, just very sick.
That's like a nurse's nightmare.
Yeah.
Because I remember when AIDS first came out, and I mean, a lot of healthcare professionals didn't want to take care of AIDS patients either, right? And I remember getting stuck by a needle, but it was not an AIDS patient. But everybody at that time was so careful that they want you to get checked. You know, it's a scary thing. You don't know, right?
So, and was Ryan White, it was his story that he was a blood transfusion?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it was like unbeknownst to him, so it made it even scarier.
Ryan White and Rock Hudson. Those are the two people that stands out in everybody's mind who had HIV and AIDS, because people only thought that gay men got it. But then they found out that the gay man goes home and have sex with their wives or their girlfriends, and they pass it on. And that's when people were like, Rock Hudson and Doris Day, oh my God. But here's the thing, what I don't like is, we live in a world where we're supposed to love our brothers. We're supposed to be our sisters and brothers' keepers. But yet still, you see people who still have this stigma against people. How do we address that? Of course, we know that education and opportunities go hand in hand. How do we address that so that people can say, I am going to make a conscious effort not to judge people, to be non-judgmental, because I am not perfect. You are not perfect. How can we help people so that they open their eyes and ears and listen? And like us in healthcare, we do have to do nursing CEUs on AIDS and HIV once every 2 years to get our nursing license renewed. Sure. So talk to our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends for the ones who still have stigmas.
Well, I think the stigma still exists to a certain degree, but I think people's opinions and people's stereotypes are changed by being exposed to someone accidentally who is HIV positive, who gets involved in some way through our agency. It's only through knowledge and through education that really HIV is kind of hard to get.
Right, and love is the force that moves the universe, right? So if we have love for each other, for our family members, our community, our state, our nation, we can pretty much battle anything.
Exactly. And I wish I could tell you that the federal government loved AIDS patients and that's why they allocated the money. They allocated the money because we had a pandemic on our hands. We had people who were spreading a sexually transmitted disease and they wanted to stop it. So that's how the Ryan White funding came into existence.
Right. And
really,
you can't legislate
morality. In the name of Ryan White, our little hemophiliac boy, but and he's a hero in our community as his mother. But I mean,
so how has the disease progressed as far as medication goes?
So that was
like, how does that
was
work
the big
now?
So in the early days, we were on medications. These patients were on medications that actually killed them. Mm-hmm. And they were going to NIH and doing experimental. They were like guinea pigs in some ways. But into the late 90s, about 97, what happened was the advent of the protease inhibitors, an antiviral medication that completely arrested the HIV virus in someone who was living or affected with HIV. That kind of revolutionized the whole arena. And so then our focus was not so much on sick, dying people, but helping people to be compliant with their medication. And in doing so, they would have an undetectable viral load. That's the goal of therapy now, an undetectable viral load. And our folks are not on disability. They're living productive lives.
Well, see, and you're remembering Rock Hudson. I remember when Magic Johnson
got
diagnosed.
Alive.
And he's still alive.
But his money helped him.
Exactly.
A lot of people back then didn't
and
have
we always
it.
Talk about that, the zip code and your financial status can make a change in how
not
well you're taking
care of. Not just in HIV and AIDS, but any healthcare issue.
Right.
So here's the thing, right? The clinic, Project Response, it's right here in Brevard.
Well, the clinic is just one component of it.
We want to talk a little bit about the services offered because you offer the testing. free condoms and all that kind of stuff. So tell our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit.
The clinic is a very important component of the agency that we've had for the last 12 years, actually. And what we do is we have two infectious disease doctors that treat our clients 3 days a week. But throughout the week, we offer HIV testing, Hep C testing, and STD testing. So, I mean, so last year we did 964 STD tests. This is in 2024. We did 964 STD tests. That's people who came in off the street. So I used to, going back to the history, in the early days, it was like a haven and the HIV would gather and we'd have our little potluck suppers, but it was like a safe place. Now we're really trying to reach out in the community and we offer this STD testing at no cost if people don't have funding, but if they have insurance and they're able to pay, of course they're going to pay. For an STD panel, so people who are engaging in high-risk behavior, has symptoms, come in, get tested, and then we do that HIV panel. If they're IV drug users or other high-risk, we do that Hep C test. So the emphasis right now is on education and prevention.
You have so much compassion and empathy for people. It's, oh. I can see it. You're oh, such, you're
well,
such,
you know, it's,
where
it's,
does this come from?
It's my passion. Well, you, Sita, I,
your mom,
I come from, no, I wish, yeah, mom was a big part of it.
I would like to say my mom.
But I mean, and she was, because I come from a pastoral background, number one. I was in a religious community in the Catholic Church for the first 20 years of my life. So that was another life, several lifetimes ago.
Yes.
But that was a very important, and that's how I got introduced to HIV/AIDS. At 33 years old, I was made director of a seminary in Newburgh, New York, sitting there with five guys preparing to be seminarians, and I had nothing to do. I heard that one of our clients, our seminarians in Washington, D.C., was HIV positive, AIDS, and they were going to put him in a hospice facility. I called down there and I said, let him come live with me. I'll take care of him.
Aww.
Not even knowing what I was getting into. So I took care of this gentleman, Miguel Convite, from Caracas, Venezuela. I took care of him the last 8 months of his life. Now, I want to say I, but it was
you
a community.
You had a team. Yeah, you
it
had
It was
people.
A community
yes.
of people yes. there and at this house of prayer, and they all stepped in and took wonderful care of him. But I journeyed with him. And so that was my...
It's your calling.
When Miguel died, I was practically dead myself from being caregiver. But then started slowly getting involved in the Hudson Valley AIDS services. My fantasy was to go to Zambia and be a missionary. One out of every three persons in Zambia is HIV positive. So I wanted to be a missionary over there. But God, in his own mysterious ways, led me to Orlando.
Yeah. And so at the clinic, you all also have, I noticed here, support groups, mental health counseling. You have financial assistance for rent and utility if somebody qualifies. Not everybody emotional could come and get that. And you have dental assistance and eye exams.
But this is all specifically, so you have to have an HIV diagnosis to be able to access.
Yeah, not anybody could, yes.
No. HIV testing, yes. STD testing, yes. Everybody's welcome. And there is one day a month where we do offer our food pantry to the community because we receive funding through our local food pantry. An interesting thing about, I just want to say this because I have to say kudos to the Brevard United Way. I know they're the Space Coast United Way presently. But back in the 90s when there was such stigma, it was the United Way of Brevard who funded our education outreach to go out into the community and to speak and educate the community at large. So, I mean, and they continue to fund that part of us. The state funds another portion of that, but very interesting, that funding is being eliminated July 1.
Wow.
So we have two people that will no longer... The state won't pay for it, but we have another funding source that we can keep.
Well, you know what it is, too. I mean, I know most of my friends who are in the business of helping folks with HIV, AIDS, hepatitis, any kind of infectious diseases and stuff, a lot of it has to do with behavior.
No, sure.
And I'm sure when you all do mental health counseling, you do counsel people that sometimes in order to change the world, you got to look at yourself and change your own behavior.
Exactly. And right? That's so those moments, and all of us at the agency are certified to do HIV testing and Hep C tests, to do the rapid test, which detects the virus, which detects the antibodies for HIV. And then we get another test to verify that. So, but those are teachable,
moments,
very important
yes.
moments in people's lives. And they come in so scared and so nervous and yet educational, where we give them the tools and teach them what is high-risk behavior and what isn't.
Yeah. Does people ever ask you or say to you how they feel about having AIDS and HIV? And what are some... Talk to our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Michael Pecco. And I'm so grateful that you took the time to come in today. Talk to us about this. You know, I'm sure you have moments when you can tell us about some stories about people that came in and said, you know, hold their head in their hand and say, oh, my God.
Right, right. Well, you know, actually, I remember a gentleman, a couple came in. And the gentleman came in to be tested. I tested him, and sure enough, he tested positive. And I brought him in to give him his diagnosis. And he came in, he got hysterical.
You have to be strong.
He said, I'm going to kill myself. I'm killing myself. I'm doing it. I'm not living with this. I don't know where this came from, but I said, hey, get a hold of yourself. Before you kill yourself, you got to go out and bring your wife in here, and she's got to be tested. You may have exposed her and infected her. And that he was like stunned. So the wife did come in, and sure enough, she was not HIV positive. But, you know, it kind of like jolted him. And so the wonderful thing about that doing the testing is this gentleman, when he tested HIV positive, he immediately became my client. So I followed him into care. I got him into see the infectious disease doctor. I got him, helped him get his first medications. And so, I mean, you know, again, if someone's HIV positive, no matter how rich they are or how poor they are,
they go through the same.
They can get, they all they, get treated the
same. The emotion that they go through is the same.
Of course. And we see all stratas of society.
So for listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we're speaking with Michael Pecco. Thanks to our good friend Ellen, my co-host Ellen O'Neill.
Well, we're playing the gala.
She's the one that hooked us up with Michael Pecco today. And Allie's here with us too. Michael is the president of Project Response, right?
Right.
And I know you don't want to chat, but I'm not going to. But yeah, we've got a guest. We've got a silent partner here with us.
My partner.
Here. Yeah, we got a silent. So the thing is, you know, like being a nurse, I do know that when AIDS and HIV first came out and people were getting diagnosed and stuff, I remember taking care of a couple of AIDS patients, and they were sweet. They were kind. We just had to wear gloves and gown and whatever. Mm-hmm. And the one guy said to me that his partner strayed away from him on a cruise, and he had sex with a male on the cruise, and that's how he contracted the disease.
Sure.
And these were nice, upstanding members of the community. They were church-going people. They were Catholics or whatever it was. And but he stuck with him till the end.
Yes.
And, you know, he stayed. You know, here's the thing. The partner never got it. It's just the guy had it, you know, just he had it. So and some of the signs and symptoms that I noticed back then was, you know, fever and chills and fatigue and swollen lymph nodes, sore throat, lots of sore throat, issues with their lungs, sores. They had all that. He had all of that. Night sweats, diarrhea.
Sure.
And back then, I remember giving them a handful of pills.
Right.
We had
right.
to give those horse pills, those big pills.
Of course.
Morning, noon, and night. Now, the medication has changed as well.
Of course. As I explained in our last segment, you know, with the advent of the protease inhibitors, they take one pill a day. And now you can even get an injection once a month, get an injection that keeps you from in an undetectable state,
right,
so that you can't transmit the virus. But also, Sita, what's known, what's very important for those who are and choose to engage in high-risk behavior, and you have to know that we really, at Project Response, take very much pride in the fact that we create a non-judgment zone. Now, it doesn't matter where you are, what you've done. You come and you're ours.
Person.
And we're going to take you where you're at, and we're going to educate you, and we're going to give you what you need.
Yeah. Do you see a lot of violence? Like people come in and say they were beaten up by a partner, or finances were withdrawn or withheld and things like that? Because I would think that there are some people that if their partners are diagnosed with HIV, AIDS, and STD, whatever it is, that they have a lot of emotional trauma like that as well.
Well, I mean, and again, that's part of the whole stigma and fear of, particularly I find that in our African-American clients. I mean, just...
And the families
so
disown them,
of
too.
Anybody finding out. I mean, we've had, like clients... Remember, Florida, in our area particularly, is a very much a transient community. We have a lot of people coming in to stay with mom, staying in with grandma. And so they come to us to be treated for their HIV. So, but you know, live in fear of mom finding out, grandma finding out, their partner finding out.
Yeah. Michael, do you all do any type of outreach to high school students? Because, you know, that's one group that needs to know. I mean, we all talk about sex education, right? We talk about comprehensive sex education as well as academic and trade. But the culture we live in today with social media and the young people and sex and everybody having a different name, a pan and a trans and a bi and tri and this kind of stuff.
Sure,
exactly. You got a lot of people having sex. And it's something that as adults... And people of the world, we need to leave the world a better place, but it has to be through education.
But see, Sita, I'm an old man. I'm almost 70 years old.
You look good.
My reality is the reality of a lot of men, particularly gay men of my age. We lost all of our friends. So we lived those plague years, even though, and we survived it, thank God. But we lost a whole generation of wonderful people. Lost, and then there's another point I want to bring up to you. But the kids that you're talking about who are engaging in all kinds of behavior, you know, these people that come in, I you just can't believe the stories we hear. But those kids know nothing about our experience. They don't know what the plague
is. They don't even know what a rotary phone is.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You're right. But they didn't lose anybody. They don't know anything about HIV AIDS. What is that?
Yeah, they don't know about Ryan White or Rock Hudson.
Until they get sick. Yeah. Till they get sick, till they're in the hospital and they're being treated because they're like almost at death's door and nobody knows why they're sick. That's when they finally get their diagnosis. So what we want to do in the community is to reach those people and let them know that there's treatment and that it's a reality and you've got to be careful. And it doesn't mean that you can't be sexually active, but there's safe sex, there's using condoms, there's sexual activities that are not high-risk behavior.
Right.
That's
and so in order
to
do all the stuff you guys are doing with giving out the free condoms, mental health counseling, you even give them food and from the pantry and all that good stuff. We need to pay for all of this. And one of the ways that you have a stream of income coming in to fund all of these activities is events. And you've got a gala coming up, and Miss Ellen O'Neill is going to be playing.
Yes, the Phoenix Band is going to be our featured band for that evening. We're so excited. So the theme of this year's gala, this is only our second gala. Whoever thought we'd have a gala, Project Response. You know, we've been so busy in the trenches just doing the hard work and taking care of the people. We never had time for a gala. But we have a new executive director. Actually, I'm here representing him here today. He was away for the weekend and won't be back to work. Eric Hendrickson. So I'm here in his place. I'd love for him to come sometime and talk to you also. But so the theme this year is the Moulin Rouge. So,
where is it going to be held, and where?
So it's going
Ellen
to
looks
be
like Ellen, she knows. Ellen, you at know. The Grand Manor. It's 1450 Sarno Road.
Oh, thank you.
It's going to be October 4th. There are tickets. The sale for the tickets actually went on May 10th. So they're available now. And you can go to the Project Response website,
right,
which is
exactly projectresponse.org.
There you go.
So you can buy your tickets. And there's different levels of sponsorship, you know. For like, I just bought a table from my family. So from May 10th to June 10th, the tickets for individual tickets are $75 a ticket. After June 10th, it goes to $100.
Not bad.
So people get tickets now. And that includes a buffet dinner, and just the great show,
so,
Dancing
so for,
with
you
Phoenix.
Know, our show is very unscripted. It's like you're my friend. We're having coffee, but not really drinking the coffee. He'll take it away from us. So the thing is, you know, there are people out there that still have their head buried in the sand. People are going to have sex no matter what it is or with who, right? And let's say you have to talk to some of these people who you know, I have them in my family. I know them in my friends group. You know, Indian people can be very conservative at times. And they do stigmatize their family, their relatives. There are people that, because they're gay, they're not invited to family events, not just in my family, but other families too. There are people that would say, well, I don't want my children to learn that from people. How do we say to people out there in the world, here from Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, that, hey, you can't do that. It's wrong. You can't judge people. It's not fair and it's not right.
I think it's by somehow having your life touched by this disease, or a friend or a family member, having a family member who's gay and journeying with them and getting to know them and being in relationship. I think it's basically about relationships. And I think that's what Project Response does the best. We are in relationship with all these people through our clinical staff, through our food pantry, through the different ways, and even the case managers, they're like professional friends who are there to guide them, whatever states. And so there's another component of HIV that nobody ever even talks about, but because I've been around for so long, I'm such a dinosaur, I'm just so aware of it. These people that were diagnosed in the 90s, in 1990, and in the early 90s, who have been diagnosed 35 years, 25 years, those people all went on disability as young people. So now they're my age, they're in their 60s, and they're still on disability. They're still on disability. They've lived their whole life in poverty to pay for their medical care and to pay for their medications. And so, you know, they're all asymptomatic. They're a lot of them are compliant. Not everybody, but, you know, a lot of them are compliant and living healthy lives, but they lived a life of poverty. And so these
And a lot of them are also lonely.
Well, they are lonely.
And it's good that you have a place
exactly.
like Project Response and that you're going to have
and
a
we
gala.
Have support
and you
groups.
Can bring people together.
We do social events. You know, we had a Valentine's dance. We have a Christmas party. I mean, you know, there are just lots of means. In the early days particularly, we would do a monthly potluck dinner, which was real popular and very... There's not so much a need for that anymore. People are busy doing their lives. You know, they don't need, they need support.
I think what you're saying to our listeners too is having a diagnosis of HIV is not a death sentence anymore.
Oh, definitely not.
That you could still go out and live your life. And if you have to change your behavior, change it for the better, right? And make sure you know what you're doing.
And if you're engaging in high-risk behavior, get tested. Know your status. That's the important message.
Because you don't want to spread it to
exactly
so many people.
Spread it, or you don't want to get sick and end up in the hospital. If we can get you in the early stages of your infection, and those symptoms that you were mentioning earlier, Sita, those are the signs of someone seroconverting from negative to positive. So, but you have to know that we get like hyperchondriac. Oh, my lymph.
I said when I went through nursing
school, I thought
I had
every
disease.
Yeah, exactly.
Every
exactly,
time we talk about
exactly.
a liver problem, I got that.
Exactly.
The nurses would be like, I think I have all of those things, you know, because all the symptoms, you know.
Oh, listen.
But I think, you know, it's good to be able to sit down with people and talk about what's going on in our world and figure it out.
You know, while I'm saying that to you, listen, I was involved. I left the HIV, the nonprofit sector, and went to a for profit. I did a home delivered meal program throughout the state of Florida for a company that marketed the HIV community. So of course I went and marketed. But anyway, I got involved with one of the HIV clients from the agency. And so we were sexually active, and you know, I'm not proud to say this, but I mean I engaged in high risk behavior. After all, yes. Oh my God.
After all the education
and seeing people dying and presiding at their funerals. I mean, you know.
Like my mother would say, the devil is at work.
Exactly. Yeah. Of course. So, but I cannot tell you how relieved I was when I finally got tested. And it was my aunt said, you got to go get tested. And found I was negative.
And you change your behavior.
Me, of course.
And you change your behavior and you change your life around. Right. So give us the website one more time. This is such a nice, engaging conversation.
I want to give you the website is projectresponse.org. Our agency is located at 378 Babcock Street, Melbourne, Florida, 32935. And our phone number is 321-724-1177.
And make sure you get those tickets for October 4th, the fantastic gala that's going to happen at the Grand Manor on 1450 Sarno Road. But we need to take a quick break and listen to our sponsors and get right on to Serene Harbor. So we'll be right back after these messages. Please stay tuned to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere.
That's right. All over the World Wide Web, 1510wwbc.com. You can hit that Listen Live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, there we also archive the shows by date. And you just look up on every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You'll see Viewpoint with Sita and Friends that you can download from there. Of course, all of that we share on our social media channels, as well as our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com.
Wow. What a great first segment we had.
Yes.
And I would just like to tell Michael that I think at every bar where there's a lot of people engaging in a lot of drinking, maybe there should be a sign there that says, before you go home with this person, make sure you get tested, because you don't know where this person has been.
It's still true.
Amen.
It's still true.
That's the takeaway from the show. Yeah. All right. Our second segment, of course, our listeners know we've been friends with Serene Harbor forever.
Yes.
They came on our show 15 years ago. Then after
we've raised money for the gate. We've raised money to have the pets there at the shelter. We've done, so it's been 10 years, at least 12 years.
Right.
Since we've been
And I had my luncheons in Tortoise Island, right. And I donated the proceeds from my book and my luncheons to Serene Harbor.
We love Serene Harbor.
Thanks to Nancy back then. She was Nancy Peltonen, and now Beverly DeMaia is there. So I decided that today would be a great day to have them come on. But it's happened. It so happened that the Combs trial is going on. This Sean Puffy Combs guy, his trial is going on. Mm-hmm. And a few people reached out to me and said, you should do a show about why women don't leave, because everyone is judging this girl, Cassie. Right. Now, I don't know these people. I'm an old lady. Right. What do I know? I'm 60 right. years old. I don't know who sings rap and this and that, but I know enough to know she's a wealthy woman as well, and she's a singer. Mm-hmm. So I figured what a great idea to just talk about those kind of things with Serene Harbor today. And who do we have? We have Courtney Malfatti. And Courtney is a dedicated advocate for survivors of domestic violence. And she currently serves as a program manager for Serene Harbor. And then, of course, we have my good friend, Nikki Helton. And Nikki is the administrative assistant and marketing content coordinator for Serene Harbor. And for our listeners who are tuning in, Serene Harbor is a nonprofit domestic violence center here in Brevard. And they do a lot of good stuff helping people. So let's go with Nikki. Tell our listeners a little bit how you got involved with Serene Harbor and anything else you want them to know about yourself.
Oh, okay. All right. I actually started out as a volunteer for Serene Harbor.
I remember that.
Yes, in 2019, and then came into the marketing role, and now I'm kind of dipping my toes in some different waters with the organization, doing some admin and things and marketing and stuff. But yeah, and just trying to support the great work that our programs do. We have some new initiatives going on that Courtney can tell you a little bit about as well. And I'm the behind the scenes, but I'm okay with that. But, you know, we're doing some great work with survivors.
Well, thank you. And so, Courtney, and what is your role there?
So I am our program manager and the supportive housing manager. Supportive housing is a new program that we have that is aimed to help survivors get in the door of a new place or even stay where they are. When you go from two incomes to one, especially in today's economy, I think it's a huge shift and a huge change. So the goal for that program is to keep them there or move them into a new place, because those move-in costs are just as crazy right now. And I came into Serene Harbor. I'm actually from New York, and I moved here about 3 years ago. And my mission and my passion has always been domestic violence as a survivor myself. So I kind of wanted to give back and be a voice to any survivor that, you know, you can come out on the other side and actually help people in the same situation.
Right. And I read on your newsletter that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. And it's great that we had you guys and Project Response on, because that is a big issue with domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
So many mental issues that people have. And I think sometimes a lot of the violence we see stems from that as well, you know. So so talk to us a little bit about, you know, we're watching this trial and a lot of people are talking about why this girl didn't leave. So there's so many signs and symptoms of domestic violence, right? So tell us some of the signs and symptoms, whoever wants to take that question.
Yeah,
and then, of course, let's talk about why she didn't leave, because we all know it's more dangerous at times.
Yes, I think that's a huge question for survivors and a stigma of, like, why didn't you leave if it was so bad? Personally, I was in it myself for 5 years as a young adult at 17. And, you know the signs, but you are not the outsider looking in on the situation. So sometimes you try and minimize those signs and make it okay. And honestly, they, as an abuser and a narcissist, they will convince you that what they're doing is, you know, a reaction to what you made them do. So we see a lot of, well, you made me do this. You know, we got in an argument and look what you made me do. And they almost convince you that it genuinely is your fault. So you don't leave because you think you are the problem. And I think that's a huge issue.
And you always feel you could fix somebody, right?
Correct.
If I just do this, I can fix it.
Yes.
Maybe if I didn't say that word, next time I'll try to say a different word. Because I am also a survivor from domestic violence of my first marriage and happily married now for 33 years. And that's what I always thought, that I could fix it.
Yes.
You know, and a lot of us were raised in cultures where you are told, you know, stay married, have your children, have a home, a white picket fence, send your kids to school, college, you know, the conventional things. And so we don't want to let our families down.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You could take that, Nikki.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, you have a lot of the outside pressure to, like you said, for the sake of the kids, right? I remember that was one that I heard a lot. It's like, you should stay for the sake of the kids and not looking at, well, maybe not being in that environment would be better for the sake of the kids, right? Rather than staying. And we do see, I think the average now is, what, 8 times
mm-hmm.
for a survivor to leave and then go back. And there could be lots of factors, not just that, but also financial or educational. And just because you think somebody has the means, like the person, celebrity you're talking about, doesn't necessarily mean they have access to everything. We see financial abuse a lot of times, so they're not really in control of their assets and their resources.
And fear.
Absolutely.
Biggest 100%. Fear. People are so scared.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in that case, too, it's such a high profile. She, you know, I know I've heard, like, different commentaries and so forth, that she's afraid of her career, like that her career is going to take a big tumble because he's going to make sure that doesn't happen. So, you know, it even gets bigger than financial. She could probably be fine at some point financially, right? But unfortunately, that stigma of, like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to make it without them.
Yeah.
Sort of, it gets to that, to the core. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So let's go through, like, there's so many types of abuse, right? We have physical abuse, we have sexual abuse, emotional abuse, financial abuse. Now I heard this digital abuse.
Mm.
That never used, like, 5 years ago, we didn't even talk about that one. But that is people taking your pictures, private things, mm-hmm. showing it up and all that, right?
Yeah.
So are you all doing any outreach to the young people to teach them about all these type of different abuse?
Yeah, we're pretty heavily in the schools. We're trying to get a little bit more in the schools to do. We have a prevention program through there about healthy relationships. We also just recently started our youth ambassador program for young adults to come in, and we talk about what they see in the schools, because, like you said, digital abuse is a new one.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the trends that they're seeing in school, and getting them to talk about it and really be comfortable talking about it with their friends and telling them, like, hey, this doesn't sound like you're in a healthy relationship, and be able to give them advice. That's a huge program I personally advocate for, because I think if I had that in high school, I may not have been in the situation that I was in. So it is really huge to start that when they're younger, so that they can know those signs. And it may not work. You know, sometimes you do know the signs and you just get wrapped in it. But it is really big in the younger community, because they're the future.
Yeah. And, you know, the abusers, they erode the victim's self-esteem and mm-hmm. self-worth. They make you feel so low about yourself. So, Nikki, how can we help our young men, women, girls, boys, that you're beautiful, your self-esteem, you're worth something. Be confident. Give the world your best. I mean, there are some kids that can't talk to their parents about their sexual identity or whatever it is. And they depend on people like us to say you're worth something. How do we approach that subject with young people?
I think it's funny, because you were talking about in the previous segment, relationships, right? You have to build relationships, because we could tell them all day long, they don't know us. We don't have any value in their lives. I mean, we can attempt it, but really it's going to be about the community reaching out, neighbors reaching out to with each other and building these relationships so that you can speak life into these young people, right? You can speak this positivity into them. And we try and do that with our prevention program, and I think we make really great strides, but in the end, it's going to takes a village, right? So I think it's going to take building those relationships to have those kind of conversations.
Yeah, and we've all read about celebrities, and right here we had someone in Brevard that tried to leave and she got shot, right?
Mm-hmm. Nadine,
right? So a lot of people are saying, well, why this girl in this trial, this Cassie girl, why did she didn't leave? But you read the news reports and they're saying that almost up to 75% of the domestic violence related homicides happen when the person leaves or they attempt to leave. So yeah. Any one of you could.
It's the most dangerous time, especially if they're caught trying to leave. We use that hotline to really safety plan with a lot of people that call on ways to safely leave. You know, packing a to-go bag, but how do you do that while they're home with you? How do you do that secretively? I was just talking about an instance that I used when I was on hotline of when you're doing laundry, when you're throwing stuff in the dryer, taking stuff out of the dryer, putting it in a separate bag and hiding it because no one's going to see you taking those clothes out and putting them in a bag and just doing very small things. Survivor safety plan, and they don't even know it.
So what you're saying is if you tell somebody to just leave, it could be deadly advice.
Correct. Yes. You have to come up with a safety plan to do that safely and to have an end result of where they're going at the end. And usually, you know, it's to our shelter, which is great. Or if it's to a family member's house or we relocate them out of state to family. But that you have to have a very good safety plan for that so that they can get out safely and it's not deadly.
And I love the fact that you did that for the website as well. That if you have the website up and you feel like someone's looking over your shoulder,
yes.
There's an exit site button right at the top that takes the site down immediately.
Yep.
So that, and then it would bring it right back up again. So it's, you know, again, even getting the resources or even finding the things on your phone, you can get that thing shut off quickly if you feel like you're being
watched. Yeah.
It's almost like that love that sometimes these abuse, the victim has for the abuser, it's a toxic kind of love.
Mm hmm.
And they don't know it's toxic, but it is.
I remember my dad, when I was a young girl, and I have five sisters, he would take us all out on dates every Aww. Month. It was our, like, time, because we came from a big family. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of siblings, and my dad would open up the doors and pull out the chair, and we would have conversation over lunch. And this was from when I was probably four or five years old up until high school. And yep. And it was always that piece. And I would always ask my mom, like, I know we don't really have the money to be going out to lunch every month, you know, like that kind of thing. And she said, your dad wants you to know what it's like to be treated properly and that you should know what it's mm-hmm. like to feel like you're on a real date. So the first boyfriend that didn't open the car door, I was like, I'm leaving, you know,
yeah,
so
it's
like, it wasn't even an abuse thing. It was just like, I know how I'm supposed to be treated.
Yes.
And
well,
that's not it.
It was a respect thing, right?
Yeah.
Right,
yes.
Right. But there, his obviously his family didn't teach him about, you know, that part of it.
Yeah.
But that wasn't my deal. I was going to find the boy that had the manners to pull out the chair and to make sure that they open doors and all of those things.
Well,
so
I don't know.
It's amazing about the programming.
That doesn't happen a lot these days.
No.
I work with a lot of young people and everything is digital these days. They're all on TikTok.
Oh, when I came to New York, opening doors is not a big thing down there, up there. So when I came down here and I went on a date with a man, he opened the door and I was like, what? I can do that myself. I'm okay.
Yeah.
So it's very different for me.
Well, when we talk to our young people, right, we have to tell them about certain things to look out for. And like you said, opening doors would be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, just like paying for the meal even.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even do that anymore. But you have to tell them that not to be coerced into having sex.
Mm-hmm.
They use sex as a weapon. So how do we tell our young people that, you know, your body, your spirit, your soul, it's an ashram. It's your home. You're housing yourself, your thoughts. You know, that's your karma, whatever you do with this beautiful body. How do we tell people that don't let these fellas or these girls or whoever use sex as a weapon?
I think a huge part of it is gaining their confidence on their own so that they don't need someone to tell them they're pretty, because I think that as a young woman, I think that is great, you know, when someone kind of gives you that love bomb and that's how they reel you in of, you know, you're beautiful, you're this, and knowing that on your own and being able to be okay on your own and not needing that validation is huge. And just, again, huge with prevention of, you know, knowing the signs, the red flags. It may be nice now, but it might be love bombing down the road.
Yeah. And, you know, oftentimes you'll hear people say that one of the issues in their marriage or their relationship was being criticized all the time. The person erodes you as a human being, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not just, it happens to people from all walks of life, the poor, the wealthy, the middle class, everyone. I think, you know, shows like Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and other places, we need to lift people up, yes. Right? There are some people that when you talk to them after 10 minutes, you feel like va-va-voom. And there are some, you talk to them for 3 hours and you're like, this was draining, yes. Right? How do we teach, you know, our young people, because they grow up to be the adults we're talking about, that, hey, you can't listen to negativity. It's positivity, right?
Right. Yeah. And anything that gets repeated to you over and over, you're going to start to believe it. I don't care how confident you start out, how smart you start out, whatever gets repeated to you. So, you know, it's the repetition that will start to weigh on you and you'll believe it. And I think that could go for positive or negative.
Right? Yeah.
And really quick, we have a couple of minutes left. Just tell our listeners quickly, if you can, about some of the services that are offered at Serene Harbor, and give us your website.
Yeah, so we are at sereneharbor.org. We do have our 24/7 hotline. You can either text it or call it. It's 321-726-8282. We offer a shelter for emergency shelter for fleeing, and we offer a nice, safe place for pets. It's my favorite. Yeah. And we do have our outreach program as well. So if you're actively trying to flee, or you've already fled, but you just need that emotional support, we offer that program as well, our supportive housing program. We do have our IFP, which is our injunction for protection attorney, who is completely free. And he helps get those injunctions for the ladies and men who are trying to get a order of protection against their abuser.
And Nikki, any events coming up? Because
yes.
They have one. I hope to see you guys there for the Project Response one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we just finalized our details for November 8th. That's a Saturday at 6 p.m. at the Hilton Rialto. We're doing Purses with a Purpose, but with a theme this year.
Evening?
Yeah,
praise
evening.
The Lord. Thank you, Jesus.
And it's bourbon boots,
Krishna,
and bags. So we're going to have...
I work during the day, so I always had to take a day off to come.
Oh, see, you're not going to have to do that. It's a Saturday evening, so you can hang out and have a great time. We even have, I'm so excited about this, a mechanical bull.
Yes.
I am so excited. I know it's ridiculous, but it's going to be super fun, a great theme. You can come in your casual cowgirl and cowboy
or
whatever.
And the tickets already on the...
They are on our website.
You know,
they are live.
Last time. I might do
it
again.
I know. Yes. You, we love
so
you.
So we have 30 seconds. Either one of you could take this. Just tell our listeners, if you had to sit with... right up the elevator with someone and you want to give them a 30-second speech why they should call Serene Harbor, what should we tell them?
Oh, why you should call? I would say if you need just someone to talk to, someone to listen to you, to validate things that are going on. I think we get a lot of calls if they don't know if this is domestic violence. So someone to educate them on that, or if you do feel afraid and you want to leave, they are there to help you leave safely.
And Allie, any advice for our listeners? Because you seem to have a lot of experience. Because Danny's going to give us the cut.
I have a lot of experience, but not necessarily pleasant ones.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that we've talked about today that I wish I had known back then. So,
if you want to say something for 20 seconds, you can. Just give us a date of your gala as well. Oh, Ellen can.
Yeah, October 4th at the... Hilton, that's yours.
Hilton.
At the Grand Manor on 1450 Sarno Road. And once again, the folks, this is what community is all about. And that's why Community Radio is here. Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We support all of our nonprofits and all of the folks that are in town that are just saving the world, right? It's like saving the world
one
person
at a time.
Well,
we're giving back. That's what it takes, a village.
Yeah, amen.
Love your neighbor, love yourself, be your own best friend. I think what you said today basically is, Don't out and look for somebody else to tell you you're beautiful. Go in front of the mirror and say, even if you have a big nose and ugly feet like I do, say you're beautiful.
Tune in each and every Monday here at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 WWBC, 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. We will see you next week.